Welcome to Radio Labyrinth Presents Interview. Daniel Weinmann is a professional poker player from Atlanta, GA. He is a two-time World Poker Tour champion and a two-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner, including the 2022 1,000-entry pot limit Omaha event and the 2023 World Series of Poker $10,000 main event, beating out the largest field of entrants in tournament history ever to win $12 million. So please welcome to Radio Labyrinth Presents, David Weinmann. Congratulations and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Now, how long have you been playing poker?
I probably started playing poker for the first time at 14 or 15 years old with some friends in high school, and have been playing professionally since I got out of Georgia Tech in 2009. So it's been close to 15 years as a pro.
So you were in high school when the poker mania began?
Yeah, exactly. 03 when Moneymaker won and poker was everywhere. Online poker was booming. Yeah. Instead of, you know, having fun and going to parties in high school, my friends and I were in the basement playing cards.
And having fun and learning a skill that paid off. Do your friends also have that kind of luck, or are you the only one?
Of that initial group, I think I'm the only one that still plays at a high level. A lot of them still play from time to time, but I was the only one who kind of stuck with it.
Are you a rounders guy?
Oh, for sure. We had rounders on in the basement every single night. I could probably quote every line still.
Yeah, between rounders and then the phenomenon, just ESPN and well, everybody showing all the poker shows, it just really took off. And it kind of reached a peak and leveled off, but it's still super popular. It's still something that people will watch and people want to be involved with, and you can play online. I don't know if you can play anywhere for money, though, can you?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the boom happened, and then online poker kind of took off at the same time. In 2011, kind of the U.S. government shut it all down. All the sites had to leave the U.S. jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And now, and just in the past few years, online's kind of been making a comeback. State by state, it's been getting legalized again. So you're starting to see some of the old sites pop up, and I don't think it'll be long before you have nationwide online poker again.
Yeah, I think if you can bet on sports and, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings, why can't you play poker? Poker actually takes a little more skill than, I suppose that sports betting, there's a skill, but there's way more chance, I think, or you risk more in sports, I think. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but poker, you kind of have to know what you're doing, and you know, it's not all just bluff and this and that. You have to be smart, and you have to know the cards, and you have to know how to play right. So
yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, sports betting is interesting because there is obviously, you know, a ton more skill in poker. I'm a bit biased in that, but I think there's just so much more money behind the four major sports that have kind of pushed the laws to allow sports betting, whereas there's not really a pro poker association that has any money to get poker legalized.
You can't do prop bets when you're playing poker either, unless you're like, hey, what is the card going to be? It's going to be a heart. Okay. I don't know. Maybe if you're watching.
That's something that's actually very common in poker, especially.
Yeah. During cash games, it's real common.
Oh, okay.
Not in tournaments so much, but there's lots of stuff that goes on during cash games where they do prop bets.
Do you play around Atlanta anywhere, or can you not say? I remember back during that poker boom in the early 2000s, I remember there was a wrestler named Disco Inferno, and he was hosting games, and he got busted. I remember that. But for some reason, the cops got involved. It was just a home game, and you know, they got raided and everything. So I don't know if you can talk about that or not, but are there games that you can go to, you know, if you want?
For sure. You know, any given night in Atlanta, there's probably at least four or five poker games going. I moved back to Atlanta about a year ago, so I haven't really gotten too involved in the home game scene again. Mm-hmm. But in my early 20s, we had big games. We were playing a couple nights a week. And it operates in a pretty gray area legally. Georgia's an interesting state with gambling. I mean, technically, it'd be illegal to bet $1 on the golf course. So playing poker for any sort of real money is technically illegal. Obviously, a home game that's trying to take a rake is going to, you know, cross another boundary. But I think it's kind of more of a slap on the wrist kind of thing.
What is take a rake? Is that the house money?
Like the dealer takes, exactly. Gets paid.
Oh, okay. I don't see anything wrong with that. That seems fair.
Right, for sure. Usually a house will, you know, take a certain maybe $10 out of every pot, and they'll provide food for everybody for the night. And then it's, you know, almost like you're paying for the experience.
Nice.
I saw you had Josh Arieh on your rail.
Josh and I have been friends for close to 15 years now. I remember coming up in Atlanta Poker, Josh was the guy. I mean, he got third place in the main event in 2004, right in the middle of the poker boom. He loves this story, but the first time that we ever played poker together was at a home game, probably 15 years ago up in Alpharetta. And he goes outside to smoke a cigarette, and I'm this, you know, good kid from Tech, never smoked a cigarette in my life. And I walk outside and ask him if I can bum one. And he says, you know, I put the wrong end in my mouth. Just a great Frenchman.
So you win a big tournament. You win an awful lot of money. Do you quit your job or do you go back to work?
I was back at work Friday. I mean, I won the main event Monday, a couple days in Vegas to kind of just relax and take care of some things out there. But no, I don't think this is going to change my life drastically. You know, about a year ago, I took a big step back from playing poker full time. It was, you know, a fantastic job and hobby for a long time. But in terms of, you know, having some other things in life, you know, starting a new relationship, trying to move towards, you know, a more stable life, poker is very difficult to balance with that. Took a software job with a poker startup in the tech industry. So kind of something that I know a little bit about both industries and have really been enjoying that.
And this is a company based out of Atlanta?
It's called RF Poker. It's a startup. We have an office at Atlanta Tech Village in Buckhead. And we've kind of got a bunch of directions with it. But the idea we're going with now is kind of like building a Topgolf experience for poker. Okay. So we get a group of guys together. And instead of the activity being golf, it would be a poker-like experience. We're not sure exactly if it's going to look exactly like traditional poker, or try to simplify it a little bit so there's not as big of a learning curve. But we've got a location up in Alpharetta right now where we're kind of testing, and we've had some positive feedback so far.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website. It looks pretty cool.
I was surprised you showed up at work on Friday sober and not just there to not just there to quit.
No, everyone kind of laughed at that. And, you know, I think there's this fantasy, I guess, of people, you know, having this big windfall or winning the lottery and just quitting their job. But, you know, I feel like I had no job 15 years and I got extremely bored with it. I mean, there's only so much golf you can play.
Yeah, but in turn, though, you've turned around and made what was a hobby and what you stepped back from has set you up to have a comfortable life and be able to provide for everyone and take that worry out of the future. So that's on something that you loved, you know, growing up. That's the American dream.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't say it enough. It's incredible to win this money. And it's weird. Like, I remember getting into poker and the idea was never, this is such a great money-making opportunity. It was kind of the freedom that I was looking for and not having to go sit in a desk 9 to 5. But
I like the Turo and Rounders, right? Just the, you know, playing the game and making money and living off of it.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone on the outside seems to think that poker is this fantastic job, but it ends up being a grind just like anything else.
Are you allowed to take any of the $12 million back to your hotel room and roll around in it tonight and win it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they offered any way you want the money, you can get it. I remember talking to the president, or I forget his exact title of the World Series, but his name is Jack Effel. And we were talking the night before, and he had mentioned, you know, if anybody of the final three wanted cash payout, that we had to let him know so they could make sure to have enough on hand. So I'm sure some people have taken large sums out of there before.
Yeah. How do you carry around $12 million in cash? I mean, that doesn't sound safe.
No, I'm not sure. You definitely need some briefcases. I mean, they do a big presentation when it gets down to the final two. So they have all this money on the table. And I'm pretty sure it's like $50,000 bricks, but it's really just $100 bills on the outside with 498 singles in the middle. So, and they bring out a guy with a shotgun to protect it all, but it seems like it's all for show.
Yeah. Dude, I would have lost all of it on slots after if I had won.
My girlfriend is a big, she's a big roulette fan. So her idea was just put it all on black, and 24 does sound a lot better than 12.
Unless it lands on red.
Very true. And then we're back where we started.
Then you have to go back and do it all over again. How much does the IRS take, if you can say?
Yeah, it's treated as ordinary income. So I'll end up in the highest tax bracket, I assume. I had some outside investors as the tournament went on. I ended up hedging a little bit along the way. So I'll probably end up with a $2 to $3 million tax bill this year, which, you know, is scary to say, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have that big of a tax bill, that means you have a little bit of money stored away.
And I was going to ask you if you wanted all yourself, or if you sold any of your action before you made the final table or at the final table.
For sure. I feel like I'm pretty open about this. I have a few people that every tournament we play, we just have an agreement to swap action. Some other good players that, you know, in the past have made me a lot of money. I've made them a lot of money. You know, it just so happens that, you know, I'm going to end up taking the worst side of this and have to pay them out a large sum. And then as the tournament goes on, you start to realize that, you know, because there's so much luck involved, it's always nice to be able to take some money off the table. So before day 7 and day 8, which were, and the final table day specifically, we were able to calculate, you know, exactly what my stack was worth in real dollars. And we had some outside investors that came in and were willing to purchase that at that rate, or even at a small increase in price, given that they thought I had a small skill edge. So I ended up, you know, getting significantly less than the 12 million, but had I gotten any place other than first, it would have been a nice hedge.
Were there any big name players at any of your tables along the way that you beat?
Yeah, not till day 5, when I'm first moved to a feature table, Chris Moneymaker was there. So, you know, it's crazy. He starts the whole poker boom. Mm-hmm. I've played with him a handful of times over the years. And generally at these streamed feature tables, everyone's a little bit nervous, playing a little bit tighter. They're kind of scared to talk because you go from, you know, the outside room where you just have 8 eyes on you to the whole world is watching, or the whole poker world at least is watching. But, you know, Chris is great at that. He engages everybody. The two of us have played a fair amount, so we had some good banter at that table. But other than Chris, not really. I was actually kind of surprised with, you know, 100 people left in this tournament, not a lot of big names. And the final table specifically was probably a lot weaker competition than previous final table years.
Is there any place for people who haven't seen it and they want to go watch it? Is there a place they can watch it?
For sure. Poker Go. It's probably behind a paywall at this point. But I know that they do have a YouTube channel that probably has the first couple hours from each day. And then CBS Sports is airing. I don't think it'll be until probably late September.
But yeah, they're just on event 7 now, I think.
Right. And I think the main event was like event 80 or so.
Yeah.
A few months of CBS Sports. But I think CBS Sports, they said they have 15 episodes of main event coverage. So all the way from probably day 1 through the final table, you'll get to see a lot of it.
That's awesome. Nice.
And is it Norman Chad and Lon McCarron and everybody? Right?
I think when ESPN still had the contract, they edited it down and Norman and Lon would do all the coverage. But now I think they just take the Poker Go stream and put it directly onto CBS Sports. So you have the early morning coverage with Lon and Norman and Maria Ho. And then I think the night segments with Nick Schulman and Ali Nahat.
You've been doing a lot of media.
It's very strange for me. You know, it's been a little over a week now. I would consider myself more of a private person, so having all these requests, I feel like, you know, I've tried to handle it pretty well, but it's definitely taking me out of my comfort zone. Enjoying it. It's it comes with this title. You know, I spoke to an agent shortly after winning, and he said, you know, this is just such an amazing opportunity to turn this into a sponsorship. So you're probably going to have to be the face of poker for the next year, even if it's, you know, not exactly what you always wanted.
I'm sure you didn't plan on being the poster child for your company, but is that something that looks like it's in the works as well?
It definitely is. It's like, you know, I had a little bit of a name in the poker world before this. And when I joined the company, we had already tried to start to use that to make some connections and raise some money, you know, within the poker world. And now, you know, I'm very lucky that my partners realize how big this is and realize that my worth in the poker world has just, you know, multiplied probably 100-fold. I was wearing, you know, our logo throughout the whole event and had so many conversations and have created so many more relationships that ultimately are really going to help this company.
You got the bracelet?
Don't have it with me. It's in a deposit box, unfortunately.
Well, that's smart. You're not going to keep it in your dresser drawer.
For sure. You know, we've thought a lot about what to do with it. It's just, you know, they say it's worth $500,000. I don't know if I really believe that, but if it is, it's not something I really want sitting around the house too often.
No.
But maybe end up, you know, giving it to Georgia Tech or something and let them have it on display, or maybe our golf club, and let them deal with the insurance and the headache.
There.
Where can people find you online? Are you on social media?
Yeah, on social media, on Twitter mostly, Twitter, Instagram.
X.
Same on both. It's not on Tilt09. Back from my early days of poker, of, you know, having a small problem with tilting and losing too much money.
Yeah, that's why I never progressed. I get too angry and I make horrible decisions. And I'm not very good. Jeff could usually win. Whenever we played, like, you know, with groups and you know, our friends and stuff, Jeff usually won.
I was telling him, the last time I was in Vegas was the 2006 World Series, which was the previous largest one until this year.
Okay.
And I met Johnny Chan and who was Jamie Gold.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I didn't know who Jamie Gold was at the time. So I got Johnny Chan's autograph, but Jamie Gold was like, oh, you want his autograph? He's the best, you know, the best person to get his autograph. And then as I'm watching the series, I'm like, that's the guy that was with Johnny Chan. And then he won.
That's what's always been so interesting and, you know, fun with poker for me, is you come up and you see all these guys, and, you know, Ivy and Negreanu and Helmuth. And, you know, those were the three pillars of poker, I would say, when, you know, the poker boom hit.
Yeah.
And just through your career, you kind of progress up the stakes. And now those are guys that, you know, you play with almost every World Series, and, you know, having some, you know, good times at the table with them is awesome.
What's your next event? Do you have anything planned?
I'm not entirely sure. You know, I talked a little bit about, you know, the sponsorship opportunities. So kind of waiting in the weeds a little bit to see what comes of that. A lot of these big poker tours now that could provide sponsorship are competing neck and neck with each other. So, you know, if I end up trying to sign some kind of deal with World Poker Tour, it wouldn't really make sense to play that many World Series circuit events. So I'll probably, you know, take a step back for about a month, mostly focus on the job. And then probably by like August or September, start playing some higher stakes tournaments at specific locations.
Yeah. Do you play anywhere? I saw you won at Harris Cherokee once.
Yep. Yeah. I've actually been up to Cherokee a few times. I know they have a series coming up that I was considering going up to. Probably going to end up sitting that one out, but always, you know, that's been a fun stop for the last 10 years or so since the circuit started going there.
You eat at Paula Deen's?
I have not eaten at Paula Deen's. I know they have a brio there that I usually have most of my meals at.
I go to Paula Deen's after I lose all my money.
Seems like it's a good place to eat a lot and forget about everything and crash right after.
Go look at the bears at the zoo.
Do you go over to Mississippi ever?
I've only been down one time, I think, in my college days. Went down and played a little bit, and have always heard the action was good down there.
Well, invite us over. We'll come lose.
If you ever want to buy a podcast, we're for sale.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It feels like there's, you know, I played poker one time since winning, and that was last night at my company's kind of test program that we're running. And it's just every single person wants to beat you in every single pot. Every person that, you know, there's a bounty on my head every tournament I play. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that, you know, affects the actual poker going forward, because I've always thought that some of the biggest names have it so much easier because people are just doing anything they can to beat them in a pot or try to bluff them. And just good old normal poker ends up winning a lot more money.
If one of your friends beats you in a game, then, you know, they got bragging rights. That's good.
Yeah, you're the Johnny Chan now for all the rounders coming up.
For sure. My girlfriend ended up busting me in the tournament last night, so.
No.
She's the poker pro in the relationship now.
Well, Dan, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. We know you're busy, and we really appreciate it. And you know, stay in touch. We'll promote your company. If you ever have anything you want to talk about, let us know. Let Jeff know. And, you know, keep winning.
Thank you so much, guys. That was awesome. Thanks for having me.
try again.